I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to this here podcast called Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. I'm usually the sidekick in this superhero duo. The gravy to the potatoes, the Ed McMahon, ha, 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 yes, to the Johnny Carson that is Matt Pollard. But Matt is on international duty as starting fullback for the USA's Engineers Without Borders football club, currently on tour in Tanzania. It sounds like I made that up, but that's actually all pretty much true. So tonight, we have an emergency loan call-up from our sibling pod, DNVR's Rapids Podcast, hosted by Yair Vasquez and Mitchell Carroll. And so, with no further ado, joining me on the podcast, it's Mitchell Carroll, two bald men with beards talking about football. What could be better? Mitch, tell our listeners a little bit about you, although most of our listeners are probably already your listeners and know all about you anyways.
First of all, thank you. Very excited to be here. Me and Yahir and Dwayne Brown are our third host with us, host DNVR Rapids. It's I like to think of ourselves as like the vibes podcast. We might not always have the stats down. We might not always have the most in-depth history. You know, we're not the textbook thinkers, but we like to have fun, talk about the Rapids, react, get emotional, and I think we do a decent job of kind of being both an outlet for fans jumping in the chat after an emotional game, win or lose, and then, you know, kind of being avatars as well and kind of leading the charge that way.
I love that. The DNVR podcast is this is the second season or the third season?
We are in season number three. We started after it was fun and decided to jump in when it was miserable.
Nice. And do you know how long DNVR has been around?
DNVR started in 2015, then it was called BSN, and then in 2019 they became DNVR. In 2020, and this is actually hilarious, in March of 2020, early March of 2020, we opened the DNVR bar.
Right. amazing timing.
Immediately closed. They were doing podcasts from the bar with just, you know, them and an empty bar. And made it through, and you know, since then All City has grown into, you know, we're in Phoenix and Dallas and Chicago and Philly, and with our eyes on the rest of them. So it's really cool that the Rapids have been able to find a part in that. Obviously there's shows like Buffs and Broncos and Nuggets, and they have massive audiences, and while the Rapids aren't on that level, they, you know, we've been able to build something there and build an audience that wants to, you know, come have fun with us and talk some Rapids. So, we're happy that we get a little piece of that. You know, it's been good.
And how did you find your way to being a soccer fan and a Rapids fan? Are you, and also what's your Colorado origin story? Are you rocking one of those native bumper stickers? like that I always coveted, or no, or are you like me, one of the guys who arrived at DIA and then looked around saying, where do I get the Subaru that they're supposed to hand me?
I moved here in third grade. So I've, you know, most of my life has been spent here. I did spend a few years in college, back in California where I moved from originally. My family's from the Central Valley there. So
Matt and I are both Californians too. So oh, yeah. we are what ruined Colorado. We're both a bunch of Californians that moved there. It's amazing. But to my credit, I left. So, you know, you can have it back.
We balanced each other out, right?
Yeah.
We brought one back and one left and remains status quo.
Listen, if it weren't for me, the housing prices would be incredibly high because I gave back my house. You know, you guys, I solved the housing crisis. I solved it. I left.
I love that.
Anyway,
we need you back, actually. No, of course. I grew up here, big sports fan. It took me a while to discover the Rapids. you know, through no fault, you know, my parents didn't really, were ever really into soccer or anything like that. So, you know, I just didn't have it around. I latched on to the men's national team, early on, but you know, my first real like understanding what's going on a deeper level would be the 2006 World Cup. That's what really got its hooks in me. And you know, any international soccer I could get, men's or women's too. I mean, I would watch any of it, but I didn't really have I had no attachment to any club team. And then when I started looking into European soccer, I didn't want to just pick one of the biggest teams to start. Although that's not true now, as I do support Manchester United, but Schalke was my first love. I wanted to, you know, someone that had a US men's national team. That was Jermaine Jones, ex truly beloved Rapid, just kidding on the beloved part. He drew me in. Schalke had, you know, it's like a rich history, but hasn't had, you know, the recent success with Bayerns and Dortmunds of the world. And that got me started, got me pilled, you know, watched as much soccer as I could. And then honestly, college, I remember being in college in California. I was in San Luis Obispo, California. I was at a party and someone had the 2010 MLS Cup on, and I was like, hey, look, that's Colorado, let's go. And that pretty much started it. Not so much an everyday viewer but that was kind of the spark of okay, yeah, Rapids for sure. And then moving out here, or, you know, starting back in sports, with DNVR in 2021, Yaya was a big Rapids guy, and Andre, our GM, he had covered them, early on, 2016, 2017. And, you know, they kind of just, something just clicked, and, it's been on ever since.
That's awesome. That's a lot of that tracks with me too. Although I was, I think, maybe younger than you. I don't know. My entry drug was the '94 World Cup, and I was 16 years old. So again, that one was of course in the United States. So I think 06, that was Landon Donovan's amazing last second goal against Ghana, right? Is that
that
right?
Was 20? That had to.
That
be
might have been 2010.
Yeah, okay. I was in college for that one.
What, so,
yeah.
Do you remember something memorable from the 06 World Cup that like was part of your origin story where you're like, this is a cool sport, I like this? Because I think Americans, you know, your story is very common. It's very much like mine, which is like, you can't just, you don't like, you're not often born a soccer fan. But usually there has to be like a spark. There has to be a moment or a thing where you're like, maybe it's not one moment, but maybe it's like one game where you were like, oh my God, this is really great. I should do more of this.
I think, you know, cause this was right around like social media kind of really blowing up. I was in high school. I was a sophomore. So it was the first time I had seen soccer on like everyone was into it, like social media wise and like, you know, because local soccer was not something that everyone I was talking to was talking about or posting or, you know, whatever it was. And I just remember seeing like everybody with, you know, USA flags and talking about the games. And I had a couple friends from school who went. So I, you know, tuned into every single game they went to try and see them on TV with hopes of seeing them on TV. And the US Italy game in group play, I remember that was the one where I was like, oh man, that's like, they're huge. And, you know, we might have a chance in this. And it just felt like, oh, okay. Like we can have soccer everywhere, you know, and it's cool that it's here. And I think it just really, I mean, international soccer is to me, like that's where I really love watching. I mean, I tune into club, you know, 5 days a week or whatever, but, there's something about that World Cup specifically, the cool stadiums in Germany. I mean, that was another reason why I love Schalke, was because they got Belton's Arena in that World Cup build, which is just a gorgeous stadium. It's actually, it's on my wall back there in my office shot there. That Italy US game was what really pilled me, I think.
Nice. I mean, I think one of the challenges for me, I actually find that I'm now deeply more in love with club soccer than I am with international soccer. I just think it's very difficult to get very excited about a national team where there's not as much control. I mean, I think one of my lifelong complaints about the U.S. men's national team is it's always going to be beholden to the U.S. soccer youth pyramid, which is, you know, I mean, like, you have to plan for the 2044 World Cup difficult to do. Like, and when you have kids, like, I have a 14-year-old son now, and basically, you know, and I still think of him as a little guy. He's not anymore, but I think of him that way.
Right.
But everybody who's going to be on the national team in 8 years has been identified from his age bracket, you know, like, and that's just a kind of a mind blowing thing. I've coached also, and I've been on the board of my local club. And so it's just a very long pipeline, and it's I get why it's so much more popular in the United States. The quality is much higher. It's a lot of fun. Now you've got Mauricio Pochettino as our head coach,
yeah,
and it brings up the status a lot, but I really enjoy club soccer, and there's something to me about small scale, you know, immediate access. If you've been a Rapids ticket holder or a season ticket holder, you've had more FaceTime with top level players in a couple years as a season ticket holder than most people will have with professional athletes in their entire lifetime. It's just a really, the level of like gratitude that players have for the fan base and because of the supporters group, also because of the size of our clubs, is really an unbeatable experience. I will say also just one more thing, which was, I think I could be wrong, he might not have been my first player interview, but like Jermaine Jones was one of my first player interviews of all time. Mm-hmm. So I started getting a regular press pass back in 2016. Before then, 13, 14, 15, I was effectively a season ticket holder who did a podcast. And then eventually the club was like, accidentally, like, you don't really need to buy tickets anymore. You kind of earn the right to be here. And I was like, really? And now I'm like, get out of my way. I deserve to be here. So whatever.
Let me in. It's my time to shine.
But 3 years of writing about the Colorado Rapids from the trunk of my car, you know, so
that's amazing.
Well, it was something.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, one moment that reminded me. So in college, I had an internship at the San Luis Obispo Tribune, the little tiny newspaper in a little tiny California town. And Cal Poly is there. It's a small school, you know, sure. D1, but small. And
I was following the Rapids youth team, and they sent a kid to Cal Poly who I interviewed a bunch. He was really sweet kid. God, I don't know what happened to him. I forget his name. I could look it up, but he didn't. He only played 1 year for the soccer team, and then he dropped out, and that was that. So, but anyway,
oh no,
back to you.
So they have Cal Poly and Santa Barbara. You know, they're the closest two big, you know, college towns together, and their soccer games have like 7 of the 10 most like highest crowd sizes for NCAA soccer games. Like, yes. it's a huge deal. Even, you know. And it's a spike in the middle of the season. It's not like those games have those attendance outside of that, but it turns into this huge thing. And, you know, I remember covering that game in Cal Poly's press box. You know, it's like a closed window press box. It's not outdoor like the Richard. And I remember the place just like vibrating and going crazy over, you know, a rather small college soccer game, on the grand scale. And, that was also a big thing that kind of shifted my focus away from some other sports and into soccer, was just being able to cover that game specifically and being able to be around that team.
That's incredible. The player's name was Trevor Mowry. He was a goalkeeper for the Rapids in birth year 2001. In case you're wondering how much of a Rapids sicko I am. the longtime listeners to this podcast will know I keep a spreadsheet of every Rapids youth team that currently goes back to birth year 1997. So if you ever wanted to do the math and figure out like how many players do you need to have before you get someone who's, you know, kind of like on the amazing level of a Sam Vines or a Cole Bassett, it's a lot of players. Anyways, Mitch, great stuff. I really appreciate you joining us. You know a lot about soccer. You talk a lot about soccer. You watch the Colorado Rapids with a great eye, you know, like with the fan eye and the vibes eye is a really good thing. The challenge is we're both kind of vibes guys. So this will be a vibesy show, and that's totally, that's good. That's a good thing. All right. With that, we're going to talk a little bit about the news of the week. And it was surprising news to me. I mean, I knew the Rapids had some money, but there weren't a lot of options because you can't transfer a player from Europe because their window is closed. And you can't transfer a player in MLS because our window is closed. So there weren't a lot of players who were available. And yet the Colorado Rapids made a big signing this past week when they brought over from, I believe, formerly with QPR, but released by mutual consent, former U.S. men's national team fullback Reggie Cannon. Reggie can play on both sides, both the left and right back positions, but he has been playing more recently as a right back. He was sold a few years ago by FC Dallas off to Boa Vista in he went to Boa Vista first. I'm doing this by memory, folks. I'm not like Matt. I don't come in well prepared.
Riveting. I'm locked in on this.
he went to Boa Vista in the Portuguese league, and then turns out Boa Vista never actually paid for any of those contracts. They had brought in, I think, three players over 2 years on transfers and then failed to send the transfer fee to the teams. Reggie Cannon appealed to the FIFA and to the sports court of arbitration, and basically said, my contract is null and void and I'm going to walk. He had to fight for his international transfer certificate. He wound up, I think, briefly in Turkey and then spent time with QPR, who are in the championship. And then that, I guess, didn't work out. And he was released to begin this upcoming season. And apparently he hadn't caught on. And so the Colorado Rapids made a deal for him. Terms of the deal have not been disclosed. It's a free agent signing, so there's no transfer fee here. But the Colorado Rapids acquired him as a free agent. Now, I was confused when it first went down because I didn't realize that it was even possible to put a player on. But the move was made, I think, 2 days before Friday, and Friday became the deadline by which players needed to be registered for the teams for postseason. Cannon is signed to a 3.5-year deal. He's with the Rapids through 2027 with a club option for 2028. And that's a little bit about Reggie Cannon. He's a high-flying player for Dallas, really, really fantastic fullback, a lot of pace, a lot of ability. And, you know, honestly, Mitch, it's been several years since I've gotten to see what he's got. So I don't really know what Reggie Cannon's season will look like, what his career is at this point, and what his options are. What do you make of this signing? Do you like it? What does it mean for the team?
It's an interesting signing on a soccer level. You know, he's relatively young. You know, he's not an old player. You're not adding like a grizzled vet, right? He's born in 98. So, you know, still kind of prime years. Did okay in his European stint, I would say. Kind of fell out of favor with Queen's Park last year. I think he played 20 over, you know, had 20 something appearances last year. But I think the most interesting part of this was he was on a Gold Cup roster in 2019 with Zach Steffen and Jonathan Lewis, right? We're both on that Gold Cup roster. And so you have he kind of fits the Porg Smith reasoning of late in finding, you know, a guy who's had success, then kind of lost some success, and maybe how everyone else in Colorado is kind of turning some stuff around, he can come here and try and do that too. So it makes sense. It seems pretty low risk. You know, anybody on a free with experience like that is always going to be good if you're not sacrificing GAM or draft picks or, you know, whatever to bring in a guy like that. Then you kind of start to question a move like that, right? Where you're sacrificing assets, but on a free, if it works, you struck gold. If it doesn't, you didn't spend anything to get him.
Yeah, his FB Ref radar plot chart shows a lot of big numbers in the defensive side. 93rd percentile interceptions, 85th percentile tackles. The only challenge with those kind of numbers is that they tend to be numbers that are based on opportunities. Teams that force their fullbacks to make a lot of tackles might just be bad teams, right? Like if you're if you're on Manchester City, you don't have to be in the 99th percentile for tackles because they don't need to tackle at the like last desperate moment. So they'll force turnovers through interceptions, or they'll possess the ball so often that the percentages will be higher. Now, they're usually per 90, but it's still, you know, all that. But the trade-off with that, the worrisome numbers are his attacking numbers. And this is, by the way, four fullbacks. The percentile markings on FBref are four fullbacks. Sixth percentile in non-penalty expected goals plus expected assists. 15th percentile in shot-creating actions. 21st percentile in non-penalty goals. Not a big offensive threat, at least with QPR. And by the way, I don't know why I thought he went to Turkey. Maybe that happened. Maybe it didn't. But there's no record of it on FBref. So I may have conjured that, or they may not have marked it down because they may not track the Turkish league. But so those are some numbers about him. I think your points about him being, you know, the ripe old age of 26 years old is a good point. You know, he's in theoretically the prime of his career, although at fullback that starts to be, because of speed, the beginning of the decline. I think a guy like Keegan Rosenberry would be really angry to hear that on this podcast, and we know Keegan is a regular listener. I'm just kidding. but that's a good point. I'll just say one more thing and then I'll ask what you think about it. You know, like, it's an interesting question to ask what this means for the back line. Keegan Rosenberry is getting older. Lalas Abubakar has slotted in where Moise Bombito used to be, but I think Rapids fans for years have kind of wondered, isn't there an upgrade here that's possible? You know, the other thing is Sam Vines hasn't had a great year. He's been out with a hamstring injury the last couple of weeks. Jackson Travis has looked fine, but I think the question of, like, is Jackson Travis really the answer? Another thing that I thought was interesting about this move was I always thought Sebastian Anderson was kind of like eventually going to be groomed for the position, and now he kind of gets bumped aside. Where do you see, like, what do you think the starting lineup back four would be next year for the Colorado Rapids if all things were the same? Or do you think Reggie Cannon might force some changes even this year with how things go?
You know, that's a good question. I think part of this is, you know, with adding CONCACAF champions next year, right? You have, you know, to basically, you need like an extra starter, right? And that doesn't mean you have to go get a top of the league end extra starter. You just need someone that, you know, can be serviceable when you need to take a, you know, Saturday in Nashville, and then you have a, you know, Wednesday in, you know, the Dominican, or, you know, somewhere, some, you know, some far travel, Guatemala, wherever. And, you know, you have to be able to rotate, and you have to be able to stay afloat. And, you know, I think, not that Armas rotates very much. I think that's honestly one of my only criticisms of him this year, is that he doesn't matter short weeks, long weeks. Cole's running for 90, leading the league in distance, you know, like no one is, you know, so just having another body. I think next year, I think you just kind of slot him in as the third outside back, right? Like, maybe not this year because Jackson has played well and it's tough to, you know, integrate quickly, right? Basically, coach described it after practice today as a accelerated preseason for him, right? So it's going to take a while. It's hard to go from England to Colorado and you know, perform at a professional level in terms of your aerobic level and your fitness level. And, you know, and I think, you know, then there's some interesting questions of like, well, maybe Keegan, who might've lost a step, slides inside a little bit and you can play Reggie next to him. Or, you know, I think there's a lot of options, and I think, you know, having positional versatility, you know, you look at kind of this roster, you have guys that can play, you know, like Borg likes to get wings. They can play left, right, or center. Cole can play four different spots in the midfield, and having a guy like Reggie who can slot inside, slot outside, you know, you want him on the right, but he can play the left if you need it. And just kind of having versatility. Is he elite at any of those? No, No, you can't say he is, or else, you know, he would have held on at QPR longer. But can he be serviceable in an MLS rotation? I think so. But I've been wrong before. I'll probably be wrong again, you know? So I think all things considered, it makes a lot of sense. It makes as much sense as bringing in, you know, a Zach Steffen who was down in favor. It makes as much sense as, any of these other kind of reclamation projects. So, you know, I do trust Armas's culture in terms of getting someone to come in and buy in and sort of drop the ego, but not that he has one. I don't know that, but you know, someone who's willing to come in and do the work and kind of correct course on their journey through soccer. I'm cautiously optimistic, I would say.
Yeah. His end at QPR was funky. He played a preseason friendly for 17 minutes against Tottenham. He got a full 90 minutes in their final game of last year against Coventry, which was basically a meaningless game for them. But from roughly, my goodness, from February 17th through May 4th, he only played 45 minutes. And that was off the bench, filling in at right back in a game at which Hull scored two goals before the half. The defense got shredded. They put him on. They gave up one more goal, and Hull schwacked him. So that's an interesting question. So he was out of favor, and he was clearly desperate to get out of London. So I think one of the questions that we might ask is, what did Porik promise, and when did he promise it?
Right.
I think your take is a really good one, which is the Rapids need some squad rotation. Reggie Cannon could be the answer to that. But the other question is, like, maybe he's been promised to be kind of a full-time starter. Maybe Chris Armas, as you kind of noted, is not going to get real good at rotating the squad. It's just not in his nature. So I think it's a great move. I think you're right that your points about next year's CONCACAF Champions League is really good. That, like, this is probably more of a move about next year. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought, like, we're getting ready for the playoffs. I mean, you know, these Colorado Rapids are primed and ready to go. But I think that does make it a little bit complicated, in the sense that this is a team that is firing on all cylinders, are doing really well. Adding a player maybe messes with chemistry, maybe creates some problems. So I don't know. It's a really good question. We'll wait and see. I'm glad you could give us the Coach Armas perspective from training.
Yeah.
Anything else interesting in training this past week that you thought was notable, or got asked in the presser?
You know, I was kind of, you know, just, I always lock in on the defense, you know, especially with Lawless hurt and with, you know, just not the deepest pool of players on the team. It's not like the midfield or the wings where it kind of feels stacked, you know. Nate Jones was practicing with the twos, and I was kind of, I just kind of asked, like, what's up with that? And I think, you know, I think a sign of Nate not practicing with the ones and being available for the ones this week is that Reggie is probably ready to go. You know, that's reading the tea leaves, not necessarily sourced or anything like that. But, you know, Lawless was off to the side in concussion protocol. That came out today that he's going to be out. And so maybe it's Michael Edwards, maybe it's Keegan. Maybe, you know, there's some options there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm just curious about how that, you know, how he's going to fit, where he's going to fit. We had a discussion of, I want to say 2-3 weeks ago on the show, where it was, if you don't have, you know, especially when Sam was in a defensive rut, right? And it was, well, if you don't have enough competition to say, well, you're not playing well, we're going to start Jackson, or we're going to start Seb Anderson. If you don't have that, you need to find something to correct that, right? Like, because Sam's defense was not good enough for a stretch there to say you're a locked in starter on that left side, at least to me, right? Like, Chris is in there, he knows more, but to me, it felt like if you don't have the competition to push him, you need to find it. And I was actually on a backpacking trip up in Rocky Mountain National Park. I started that Monday. I came back Thursday afternoon. I had no service. I had no idea. I didn't tell Rapids comms that I was leaving, that I was going, because it's September. Who's expecting any sort of news this time? And so I came back, you know, to days late news that Reggie signed. And it just kind of felt,
It just you feel guilty about that. I love the you feel like you had no self-service, and it was really, you know, it's like, dude, you know, smell some fresh air, touch grass, as the kids say. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. But it was funny to come back from that and be like, September in the teens, and why did you just sign somebody? What's going on? Like, nice. It doesn't really, you know, out of nowhere. And then let's see. I mean, outside of that, you know, it feels like the rotation is pretty locked in at this point. So it's no longer like, oh, he put Ollie in here over Ronan, or, you know, it's like, oh, what is he doing with this guy? Cause all that kind of mystery is sort of gone at this point, I think, especially after the League's Cup run. So, you know, now it's injury watch, right? It's, asking a question to anyone that will listen and hopefully find an answer back, you know, and, about anything, right? I'm like, okay, well, you signed somebody now. What else? What other news do I have to be on my feet for here?
Yep. I noted to some of the other Rapids media folks that the last time I could remember the Colorado Rapids making a signing this late was on September 13th of, I think it was 2013. The Colorado Rapids signed former England international Zat Knight. He was woefully out of shape. He was horrendously awful. He didn't actually arrive because of immigration paperwork until October 1st, meaning he only played in 4 games. And then in the offseason, they cut him. So that was
great.
It was insane. It was insane. And you should have been here. He waddled out onto the field, and he was the most immobile stack of you know what you ever saw. It was like stunning. I think it was 2014. I don't remember. It was a bad season. It was a season so bad that they signed a guy basically sight unseen to come in and be even worse in the defense. So it was pretty terrible.
I think, you know, it's a sign that some of these late season guys, you know, I already forget his name from last year. They signed a wing late off of free agency and the year, you know, and it's like, this is not that, at least, you know, that this guy's around. It's 3.5 year deal. You know, like, to me, that alone has more confidence than a free agent, you know, quote unquote, you know, or like a waived contract that you're saying, all right, maybe we'll get a free 4-game look here. This does feel like a bit more of an investment, and that alone coupled with the timing does, I would say, should encourage Rapids fans a little bit more in terms of the piece he can be just because of why would you do it otherwise? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, do not disagree at all. All right, with that, we're going to turn to reviewing our last match. We had a week off the week before. The Rapids had a bye a week ago Saturday. But this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids faced the Portland Trailblazers, the Portland Timberwolves, the Portland Timbers. Yes, that's what they are. Sam Vines was out with a hamstring injury. Kevin Cabral still out with an elbow injury. Everybody else was healthy. The starting lineup was Jonathan Lewis on the left in attack, and Jackson Travis, additionally, because of Sam Vines being out, was also defending at left back. Portland brought out their best lineup. That includes the inimitable, the thug life for life, the Horn Road, genius of the midfield, always on a yellow, never on a red, Diego Chara. They paired him, of course, with Rapids murderer Anthony and Brazilian attacking number 10, Evander. You'll remember that Portland torched the Rapids for 8 goals in their previous 2 meetings this year. One of those games was the season opener, which we shall try and forget. And the other was the opening match in League's Cup for the Rapids. Portland started this match pressing and forcing Colorado into turnovers, but Colorado eventually broke through. In the 14th minute, Cole Bassett, from the right center of the field, had a gorgeous entry pass into the final third, just above the 18-yard box, that dropped to Georgi Mihailovic, who then flicked it on to Hafa Navajo, who then tapped it along over the left side to Johnny Lewis, who was breaking through completely unmarked. Johnny took it. He slotted it low into the right post and put the Pids up 1-0. Just 5 minutes later, in the 19th minute, Portland would get a good look as Evander fired a hard shot on a feisty dribble that he did all by his lonesome. Zach Steffen would parry it Antony rebounded it, and then center back Andreas Maxo, depends who you ask, would save the day with a big clearance. A few minutes later, on a corner kick, Portland's Evander put it into the center of the box. Kamal Miller headed it to the back post where David Ayala was waiting, and he dunked it home, putting the game level at one apiece. In the 29th minute, Georgi Mihailovic and Jay Lewis would combine in the 29th minute for a near mirror image of their first goal, only this time Lewis was on the pass and Mihailovic was in with the dribble from the left side and that low shot to the right. Portland's Maxime Crépeau parried this time, and Colorado would stay knotted at 1-1 as they went into halftime. Right off the whistle after halftime, Portland drove forward in a 3v4 with Santi Moreno. He fed center forward Jonathan Rodriguez, who was drifting to his right. He had run hard into the final third and then ripped a low cross to a wide open Antony, dead center of the goal, 6 yards out. The expected goals on something like that is like about a bazillion. Against all mathematical reason, Antony put his foot on the ball and it somehow went wide, and the Rapids were bailed out by sheer dumb luck in the 46th minute. Colorado responded immediately on the other end as Rafa Navajo pinged it off the bar on a 15-yard shot from the left side and just inside the box. That was at about 48, 49 minutes. Colorado had two more looks at 51 and 58. With the pressure mounting, the breakthrough came at 71. On a free kick after a foul by David Ayala on Calvin Harris, Colorado would get a free kick from 38 yards out, give or take an inch. Georgi Mihailovic, I've said that name a lot, interesting, bent in an inch-perfect ball to the center of the 18-yard box. Rafa Navajo rose up furiously and pounded it home, and the Rapids were in the driver's seat 2-1. An Antony chance in added time was parried by Zach Steffen and then cleared by Maxo, and the game looked to be over. But in literally the final seconds, Darren Yappe bumped Portland's Dario Zuparic and then put a hand on his low back. Not in that slow and sexy way like when you're trying to slow dance at a middle school dance, but no, just in kind of a, I'm steadying myself, I'm trying to check out where you are. Zuparic went down like Little Mac after Mike Tyson on the old Nintendo Punch-Out game. Referee Philip Dujic, I don't know, called it as a straight red for Yappe. And a few minutes later, the game ended with Colorado a man light, but 3 points up, and also having been promoted to third place in the Western Conference standings due to RSL's defeat at the hands of Houston Dynamo. In terms of the stats, I know Matt never gives you advanced stats at the end of this, but I'm trying to one up him a little bit in the week.
Let's go.
The Rapids had, well, he would do it. He would do it off the top of his head in the middle of our good thing, bad thing, big thing. The Rapids had 15 shots and 1.30 expected goals. Portland ended up with 17 shots and 2.12 expected goals. I did not check it, but I'm pretty sure the major difference in expected goals was that one missed Antony shot. That's the recap of the game. We'll turn it over to Mitch. Mitch, what did you notice about this game? What did you think was impressive from the Rapids? What do you think they could have done better on? Did you think they were going to beat Portland magically after being flummoxed by them in the two previous meetings? And then how did they do it?
I predicted, we always put out our little predictions on Twitter every game. And I said draw, but in my heart of hearts, I was not expecting it to go well. I watched the other two games. I saw how Antony absolutely carved this backline apart and how he continued to carve this backline apart in this game. He should have had a hat trick probably. And he just had horrible shooting luck, shooting shots taken, however you want to put it. The worst thing to me was, and you can't fix it, right? But Keegan just needs to be faster against Antony. Can't fix that one, unfortunately. But I think the highlights you have to pull, right? It's the record transfer followed by the newest record transfer. Rafa and Georgi showed up, balled out, and locked it down to win. And as they go, so go the Rapids. They are both on both on pace to set some club records. Georgi might pass it tomorrow night in terms of goal contributions. He's only two away. Rafa's three goals from setting the record for goals in a season. So, you know, when they show up and play well, this team's going to be tough to beat. And, you know, Georgia didn't have like a crazy night on the ball. I think he only had like 60 touches or something like that. That's always the measure we always look at in our postgame show. How involved was Georgie? Usually the good games, that number's high. Bad games, that number's in the 40s. 60's a good number. The crazy number that stood out to me was Ronan had over 100 touches. Ronan was everywhere. That was another great thing. Ronan was all over the game. Didn't have an assist to show for it. Didn't have, you know, any specific big chances created or anything like that. He was just the little conductor at the back, willing to get dirty on defense, which was something last year he was not willing to do as much. And so I would say the two stars drove it. And then you have another vintage Ronan performance behind it. And don't need to get too scientific. You know, when you get that's the recipe for success for the Rapids.
Yeah, I agree. I think I was unsure about Hafa Navajo at the beginning of the season, just because the Rapids have misfired on striker, big money striker signings so many times. He seemed like a latish signing. There wasn't a lot of provenance. Like, I didn't have any. There was nothing to go on. You know, it's like I don't scout the Brazilian league particularly well, so I didn't really know a ton about him. But I thought he's been good. He's gotten better, and in this game, he just looked like he was absolutely dialed in. I don't know if I've ever literally used the phrase about a Colorado Rapids player being quote unquote dialed in. I don't know if that's ever been a thing that I've said about any of our players. So that's like a fun thing to be able to say. I love your notes about touches. I'll start trying to watch that in the future. I've been a longstanding fan of Cole being moved back into the twin sixes or the eight. I think the whole team works better when he's there. I know he doesn't want to necessarily be there. He likes Georgie's spot, but like, who doesn't want to be the 10? And I think that's a laudable thing for soccer players when they want the ball and they want to be in control and they want to be up ahead. You know, that's a really good sign. But he's smart enough to actually know, like, when I'm not in that position, I will play where I'm supposed to be and I'll do it well. The other thing that I think, you know, you alluded to by noting Keegan getting shredded by Anthony was that particularly on that one shot that Evander had a shot that got turned away and then the rebound didn't drop. And that was one where the Rapids got kind of like cut apart in transition and they wound up leaving Evander in a 1v1 versus Lalas Abubakar. And Lalas used to be fast and he's still pretty mobile for a big man, but not against the, you know, dribbly Brazilian number 10. Like, that's not a thing that you really want to do. So the only thing about this game that was a little funny, there were two worries for me. I think they got away with it, but I don't want to repeat it too often. One was, and LAFC does this too, and Matt Doyle in his comment this week in MLS Armchair Analyst point was kind of making this about LAFC. And it's a good highlight for Rapids fans, because if we want to win MLS Cup this year, we are eventually going to have to figure out how to beat LAFC, who are a tough team to beat. But Matt Doyle's point was, don't let them out on the break. And I think the two worries that I had against Portland were, one, they kind of were allowed to get out on the break against us a few times. It didn't come together, but that was just because of bad luck on their part or, you know, a saving throw by us. And then the other thing was, in the early frame of the game, like the first 15 minutes, they really discombobulated the Rapids with pressing. That's normal. It's kind of regular. A lot of teams would prefer to just kind of sit back at altitude and figure out the nature of the game later. But like, it always makes me a little worried when teams press the Rapids, because they actually press break better than they ever used to. But maybe I have PTSD to the old days when, if you press, like last year especially, if you press the Rapids, they were cooked. They could not figure it out. And like the 2019 Rapids also were a team where the book on them was, if you press them, they will fall apart and you won't have to do anything else. So, and that was, by the way, that was the last year of Anthony Hudson, I think. So, you know, like those gives me PTSD, but they weathered it for 15 minutes and then both teams settled into kind of even possession from then out.
Yeah, It makes me a little scared too when you have no Cabral, you have no Amir Fernandez, who are both leaps and bounds more reliable to me in my eyes as a possession option than your Lewis's, right? Than your whoever is replacing Lewis on that. And you know, you do wonder, you know, when it comes to these teams that run, you know, that have success running, that's been Galaxy, LA, and Portland so far. If you run into them, do we see a big stylistic change with maybe Keegan sliding in and Reggie playing, or Reggie playing with Keegan still up on a level? Do you drop a midfielder for that and just have Cole as by himself deep lying, you know, and kind of let him, Sam, and Keegan control from the back? It's scary, right? Because these scorelines until now have been brutal, like just brutal. And credit to them for Zach Steffen especially for, you know, some very nice plays on breaks that probably should have been goals. You know, the Portland had the chance to make this a similar scoreline. So you just hope that come playoff time, something to beat those breaks is cooked up by Chris. Maybe he's just been holding out all season and hasn't played that card yet. But it's scary. It's really scary.
Nice. Yeah. I think this game was overall, there was just a little bit of like shakiness, but overall this is a Rapids team that went out and beat a team that they hadn't figured out how to beat all season. And they did it well, yeah. A pretty good Portland team. Portland, I think, currently sitting sixth at the end of this match. So they've started to figure it out as well. And I think at preseason, I don't think a lot of people had a lot of expectations for them because Portland, like the Rapids last year, weren't super great. So I believe Portland made the playoffs last year, but only just. So we'll see. I think there's not a zero chance that we won't meet them in the playoffs down the road. So we'll try and figure out what we did in this game that was different than the other two games, and maybe take that moving forward. Let's look ahead to the week. And by ahead, I mean probably for those of you tuning into this, the game later today, which is Wednesday, September 18th, the Colorado Rapids will be heading to Kansas, not Missouri, just Kansas, because that's where Sporting Kansas City's facility is located, if you've ever been there. I went to a game there. It was a lot of fun. It's a nice stadium. Where they will be playing Sporting Kansas City. Sporting, I will have you all know, are currently sitting pretty far down, 12th in the table. after 29 games, they have 7 wins, 7 draws, 15 losses, a minus 10 goal differential, and they sit on 28 points. It is going to be tough sledding for SKC to get themselves into the playoffs this year. Their leading scorer right now is their DP, Alan Pulido, formerly of the Mexican national team. Tommy sits in the central midfield. Daniel Shalawi, their homegrown Hungarian, is kind of slotting in on the left side, and Johnny Russell is over there on the right. I think overall this team had some problems to start the year, and they didn't really solve them as the season went on. One of the biggest worries about this team is just age in general. Tim Melia used to be one of the best goalkeepers in this league, and at this point, he is, you know, decidedly below average. The back line bleeds goals like a stuck pig. You know, the word on the street from folks I've talked to, though, is Peter Vermes does not have anything to worry about with his job. But the other thing is, this is a tough game for the Rapids because it's a 3 games in a week type turnaround. So they've got a lot going on. And Mitch, as you mentioned, there's a couple players who we're going to be missing. That Darren Yappe red card that we didn't really even talk about, because I think we both agree it's a horrendous call and if there's no sense to it at all.
Yes.
But it was not rescinded midweek. So the Rapids don't have him. And the, as far as we know, we still won't have Kevin Cabral. We still won't have Lalas Abubakar because of the head injury. And we still won't have Sam Vines because of the hamstring. So short rest, got to see a lot of different players. Mitch, What do you see in Sporting Kansas City? Anything you've noticed this season in playing them or in watching other games or any of these players that stand out to you?
Well, the last game, you know, the July 4th game came down to a stoppage time Georgi Mihailovic penalty to, you know, and they were down 1-0 in that game, 1-2-1 on the late penalty there. For as much as I think they're a bad team, for as much as I think Vermes is in over his head with this roster in particular, they always are going to show up to play the Rapids, it feels like, right? And Russell will do some Russell things.
Yes.
Shallowy will do some Shallowy things. And I'm going to be very angry on my couch yelling at the TV. And then probably yelling on the post game show. Melia is a solid keeper, tends to have his best games, I feel like, against the Rapids. But I think at the end of the day, Sporting Kansas City is four tiers below the Rapids in the MLS right now, to be generous, right? They are well below this competition. And when you look at the teams that, you know, you're a point behind LA right now, you're even with Salt Lake, Colorado's a pretty hard, you know, they still have Seattle and Galaxy and Minnesota. This is a game you just have to go win, right? You just have to go beat this team. You have to go be better, right? And that means Cole, Rafa, Georgi, go have good games. You have to, right? This is one of those ones. You guys make the big bucks. You guys are the goal scorers. Go do it. Make this a simple game. Get ready for Saturday when you have to do the same thing against another bad team.
Sporting had a really short Leagues Cup. They beat Chicago, then they lost to Toluca, and then they were knocked out. They survived and got into the knockout round, and then they just got absolutely blanked by Columbus 4-0. And then they went out and they're actually still in the Open Cup. They went out and beat Indy 11, and so they're still in that. But their last two matches, a 2-0 loss to Seattle, a 1-1 draw against New York Red Bulls, a pretty solid Red Bulls team, to be honest. But the thing that I've been thinking about is, and this is something I've noticed after watching a lot of MLS, is that when you're down to, and this is where they're at, they're down to five matches in Major League Soccer and six, including the Open Cup. Their next game in the Open Cup is September 25th versus LAFC. And then they turn around and play LAFC again on October 5th. So that's going to be uncomfortable. Not in the face. But one of the things that I notice about teams in the late stages when there's not so much to play for is that players start playing for themselves, right? It's every man for themselves. It's rats getting, you know, the rats getting off a ship. And that really changes the complexion and the organization of the team and the way they approach things. So that'll be my guess. I think the other thing for me that I'll be really interested in, because I've been watching Sporting Kansas City because they're so close to the Rapids, and I've been following Peter Vermes. I think he's probably been at Sporting as long as I've been covering the Rapids, it feels like. But this feels like a team that's going to go through a big teardown. And a lot of these guys have been like ride or die Sporting Kansas City for a really, really long time. Russell seems like he's been there forever. Shallowy has been there forever. Kyrie Shelton is back with them after having gone away, but having been back with them. Alan Pulido hasn't been there forever, but it feels like it. Tim Melia absolutely has been there forever. Is this their last ride? I don't know. Some of the guys they brought in, like Remy Walter and Robert Veloder, to kind of steady things, haven't been the solutions that they were supposed to be. Some of those contracts are coming up. So it's really, really interesting to me how that'll affect the way they play the game. Will they play a very tight and controlled game? Will they play aggressively, or will they be playing in kind of like a disjointed kind of like chaotic kind of manner, because everybody's trying to impress somebody with a highlight film so they can get to some second division team in France, or, you know, go back to the Bosnian first division or whatever it is that their agents are trying to angle for them. So that's my thought on Sporting. With that, unless you have any other thoughts.
No, go ahead.
Good. All right. Well, we've got two games to preview. We won't spend too much time on Toronto. Toronto have been a hot mess for several years. And they've been, if you're not an East Coast watcher, if you don't watch the Eastern Conference, I get to watch a lot of the Eastern Conference because I'm here in Pittsburgh. But Toronto has just surprisingly snuck their way into eighth place. Their last couple games have gone pretty well. They faced Austin last week and won 2-1. They took a 3-1 loss against Toronto. They beat Forge FC in the Canadian Championship, and then their first game back after dropping out of League's Cup was a 1-0 win on the road versus Houston. So they have been getting it done mostly. They had a really rough stretch in June and July where they went 7 games winless, but they seem to have righted the ship since then. And they've got a pretty decent squad overall of some fairly solid players. They finally figured out how to get Bernadeschi and Insigne playing together. Both are doing okay. Bernadeschi has 8 goals. Insigne has 4 and 5 assists. Richie Lherrier, who is a super fun player to watch, 29 years old, Canadian international, has been holding it down on that left wing. They play basically a 3-4-3 kind of thing that's really more of like a 5-4-1 or a 5-2-2, depending on how you want to call it out. Up top, they've been mixing and matching a lot. But right now, their most dedicated striker is 21-year-old DeAndre Kerr. The other guy to kind of watch out for, of course, Canadian international, 32-year-old Jonathan Osorio. He's been coming off the bench lately for the Canadian national team, not getting the same kind of level of dap with his guys, but he is, you know, always a talented player, and he is an MLS for life kind of guy. He knows the league, he knows the refs, he knows his opponents, and I think that'll be really fun. And then lastly, in goal is the veteran, the venerable Sean Johnson, Sean John himself, who's been with Chicago and has been with New York, and now he's with Toronto. And I think that those guys are my favorites. I just really like those kind of MLS lifer type dudes. You know, Johnson had a little bit of time with the U.S. men's national team, too short for me. I thought he was always really just a class act and a really, really dope guy to have there. We're kind of going through it again with the U.S. men's national team about, and Matt and I talked about this on the pod a couple weeks ago, about like, who is our goalkeeper? What is a goalkeeper? What do we do about goalkeeper? So maybe Sean John gets a look again. I don't think so, but but Toronto's, I haven't seen Toronto play in a couple weeks, but they're holding it down in a very difficult Eastern Conference this year. And like I said, they're bouncing back after a rough patch in the middle of the summer, and they look like they could lock down a playoff spot. The team that's below them is DC United, and DC United are looking spectacular also, with Christian Benteke up top pairing with former Colorado Dom Baji. So I know we're not playing DC United this week, but I just wanted to point out that I watched a little bit of DC United this last week, and I was like, Dom Baji plays for DC United? I totally forgot. So it was great to see. And it was great to see him playing against the Belgian international, Christian and Benteke. I said international a lot on this podcast. I don't know what's up with that. Anyways, Mitch, do you have any thoughts on Toronto, or are you going to let me just keep going and bury myself in nonsense?
I could listen to these monologues for a long time. Highly entertaining on this end.
Love it.
Toronto, they love to give up a lot of goals. That is like... They, you know, they have sort of righted the ship recently, but man, do they love giving up a bunch of goals. And you know who's due for a game with a bunch of goals is this Rapids offense. And I think, you know, if I was ever going to throw a wager towards the over in a game, I would take the Rapids against this Toronto team. They don't score a ton. They give up a lot. And they've given up a lot to, like, they give up like 4 goals to Chicago this year. You know, they got 3-0'd to Red Bulls. They gave up 4 to Cincy. They gave up 4 to Columbus. They gave up 4 to Miami in League's Cup. And 4 would be great. I like when the Rapids score 4 goals. Doesn't happen very often. So, you know, you hope on the other side of SKC that you're healthy and ready to just take care of business against this is one of those should win games, right? And while they do have that Houston result on the road is you know, a little worrisome, you know, I think overall this is a should win, score a bunch of goals, move on to the two big ones coming up.
Nice. The Rapids have scored four goals twice this season, and I believe for me that was probably a shock both times. They beat Montreal 4-1 on June 22nd in a game that I don't remember at all. And they beat St. Louis 4-1 on July 7th in a game that for some reason I do remember. It was right after the 4th of July, so I remember getting that one in.
The yappy goal, the first
That's
yappy goal.
right. That's what that was. Very good. So but that's right. But they've had four goals scored upon them, I think either three times, four times, four times.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, I mean.
So yeah, no, you're right. And Salt Lake did us 5-3. So yeah, we're due for some goals. As to your point, Toronto 51 goals against, second most in the Eastern Conference. There's a couple teams in the Western Conference that are even worse, but that's pretty bad. And
Yeah.
that's a notable thing that the Rapids will probably want to exploit if they can get a chance at it. But that rotation question is up there, which is my experience this year. It seems like Chris Armas generally just likes to rotate the squad overwhelmingly on the Wednesday game. And then on the Saturday game, use the same guys. So we can expect a bit of chop and change this for today slash tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this. But for the weekend, expect the same old. Although we'll see who's healthy. And it might be an opportunity. The logic would be that if Darren Yappe was going to get a start, it would be on Wednesday at striker to spell Hafa Navajo. But he's not available because of the red card. So does that mean that Hoffa starts on Wednesday and Darren starts on, or do they do something different at striker? There aren't a ton of options at striker. It
Yeah, I
feels
guess you could throw Calvin out there if you needed to, you
right.
know.
He's played a couple
Yeah.
games of striker, and I think Johnny played like one, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody's really shown that they can do it properly.
No.
So yeah,
You
it's
know,
interesting.
KSB played some striker at Maryland, although he's mostly on the wing. Nothing encouraged, you know, you're kind of you're
But he's not really
that
playing at
yeah.
all. So, I mean, he's
No.
getting garbage minutes at the end of the game. So the odds that he
Yeah.
starts are slim and none. I don't know. You're
Yeah.
just hoping a guy like that can get, 30 minutes instead of the usual five. So,
Yeah. I have a question for you.
yo.
So Cole was super hot going into Leagues Cup. No goals, no assists through all of Leagues Cup.
Right.
Gets an assist against Dallas, blanked again on Saturday. This feels like two games where you see Cole back on the score sheet, right? You think this could be where it like kind of course corrects after a lull in the in you know he's still running as much as ever, you know he's still leading the league in distance, so it's not an effort problem, and it just like to you, do you see him getting off the slide in either one of these?
It's a great question. I am totally a Cole Bassett homer at this point. Like I am honest to a fault, and one of my faults is when I interview a player and I really like the interview, then I become a fan of that player, and then
Yeah.
I can't truly be objective. I might be the only like fan supporter reporter who admits that out loud. Like I think we're supposed to be objective, and like I'm honest with my lack of objectivity sometimes, right? Like I know
Yeah.
the pros at the Denver Post would never admit stuff like that out loud, but I'm going to admit that out loud. But I know, having talked to guys who work for the Post and cover the Rapids for years, they have favorites too. They're just
Yeah.
better at pretending like they don't. So one of the things that was interesting in the interview that I did with him that we posted this last week on our Substack was that he feels like he really connects well with certain players. He feels like he connects well with Sam Vines. He feels like he connects well with Johnny Lewis. So moving him back and having Sam out is a factor of that. He also feels like he connects really well with Ollie LaRaz. So the fact that he's not playing with Sam and he's not playing with Ollie might have an effect on that. The other thing was, he said in his interview when Georgi Mihailovic went off to France with the US Men's National Team, he was really excited to step up and be the number 10. And the interesting thing about that was the Rapids got the result that they wanted in all of the games where Cole played, and Cole played at the 10, but he didn't record any numerical contribution, right? He didn't get an assist, he didn't get a goal. So to me, the consummate team player is a guy who doesn't get on the score sheet, but the team wins anyways. And it's hard for me to figure out whether Cole, if the team won because Cole was selfless or despite the fact that Cole didn't really get on the score sheet. I thought he was mostly very useful, very good, kind of a distraction. But I also think that one of Cole's superpowers that he's had for years is the late arrival in the box after either the first shot or after someone else has dribbled in. And that was taken out of his hands with that. So it's a great question. I think I think for me, it's more about position than timing. I think the other thing that you really well said at the very beginning of the pod, but you didn't spell it out here for our listeners, is you're worried about Armas's lack of resting Cole. The fact that Cole Bassett leads the entire league in distance traveled. Nobody runs like Cole Bassett. But if you play him every game and you play 90 minutes and he runs more than everybody else, even 26-year-olds, 23-year-olds, I don't know how old Cole is at this point, 23?
He's 22.
22. Maybe. Even 22-year-olds.
He's 23.
Yeah. Even 23-year-olds get tired, right? So I think that is a concern. I think he'll be fine. I do think you're right. If I were Chris Armas, I might consider rotating some of my guys over the next five games and giving them, you know, playing them 45 minutes or, you know, having them come off the bench for 30 instead of having them play the full 90 with an eye towards the playoffs. But, you know, asking that, by the way, that I remember Robin Fraser having the same problem in the Rapids commentary at also basically saying the same thing, which was, Robin needs to rotate the squad more or we're going to have problems. And then we did have problems. But hindsight's always 20/20. Were we right? Do we not just have the horses? We'll never know. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
Go
ahead, Mitch.
Oh no, I really hope Cole can find that goal scoring run again as that, not no longer the second or third guy in, but maybe he's the fourth or fifth guy into that box. And, you know, like you said, he has such a knack for just showing up on the right deflection and the right, you know, just being lucky. And you think running as much as he has, that's going to put you in the right position more times than not, right? Like you earn the luck by having that nonstop motors and, you know, as great as it's been to see Yappy get going and to see Johnny Lewis find some footing and, Calvin had a nice run during League's Cup. You still need Cole to be, you know, like you bank on that being Cole plus that, not that without Cole, right? So hopefully, especially in these ones where you can't afford to drop points. Like if you drop points to Seattle, Galaxy, understandable, but you got to beat SKC, you got to beat Toronto. Let's get Cole right in those, right? Let's get that move.
Yeah. I'd like to see Mike Edwards. I just haven't seen much of him this year. I think a lot of people have talked about, like, wouldn't it be great to see Nate Jones? But I don't think we're going to see Nate Jones. And that feels like something that would be unexpected. I think the one last player that I would really like to kind of like see a little bit more of, that he's almost been a missing man, he's almost been forgotten, as Jasper Lofelson. I think the depth chart at defensive midfield has just gotten really, really deep. I think when Ali Leroy started the season, you know, on the starting, you know, 11, that really kind of changed things for Lofelson. You mentioned Kamani Stewart-Baines used to play striker. Lofelson was here in Pittsburgh. He played for Pitt and he used to be a fullback. He used to be a very high pressing overlapping right back. And I think that's a position that he might be able to kind of play. Although now we're very deep at right back. So I don't know that we need that, but I'd like to see him on Wednesday. I'd like to see him get a little bit of time down the stretch. I think he's kind of been rendered unnecessary, but I do think that Lofelson likely has a long career in professional soccer, either here or abroad. So I'd like to see him get some run. That's a good place to send it out on. Mitch, it has been an honor. Can you tell people a little bit about your podcast and how to listen to it and any other content or shameless promotion that you'd like to do of your work?
Rapids, he has our DNVR Sports on YouTube, DNVR_Rapids on Twitter, and then me, you know, find You can find me through all those channels. And, you know, we go live right after every game. If it's a road game, it's about an hour after. If it's a home game, because I have to drive home to do the post game show. And so, you know, if you're feeling some type of way, the comments are open immediately after the game. You can jump in and scream at us or scream at, you know, some player through the comments, however you want to do it. And, you know, we appreciate any of that interaction there. And, you know, and we're getting hyped for the playoff run. So definitely come join us and see if we can fit into your podcast rotation.
Thanks, Mitch. We love your podcast. We're big fans over here. We love the merch too. And Matt likes to hit it up at the DNVR bar, and he's been a grateful guest host for you, guest on your show. And we're glad to give him a loan. I think you gave a good 90 minutes for us. Scored 3 goals. Thank you. Played excellent defense. You high press really well. I mean, like, I would refer you to the Tanzania national team anytime.
Thank you.
I don't know if we can trade you to Tanzania in exchange for 2 pit toilets and a concrete bunker to be named later, but Matt's coming back. We'll be back, but we'll have you on again. I'll tell Matt how much fun we had and that so because I might be out coming up very soon, because it's the Jewish high holidays, which are, like, you know, basically crunch time for us. It's the World Cup for rabbis, and as much as I
love that,
as much as I wish this was my main job, daddy got to pay the bills some other way. You know, kosher brisket does not fall off the truck on its own. You got to work for it. So with that, you guys know where to get us. You can check our Substack at holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can catch our podcast, Holding the Highline, through any of your podcatchers, which is Apple and Spotify and a few other things. We're on the Believe Network. Matt will be back, I think, starting next week, and he can tell you all the things about how to do that. You can become a paid subscriber to Holding the Highline by paying $48 for the year. That's a little tip in our jars that helps us to buy beer, helps Matt to pay for gas to get out to training, helps me to pay for the one airfare ticket that I fly out to either Colorado, or this past year I got to go to San Jose, which that was weird, but super fun. Chris Armas looks at me and he goes, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I don't know." So I just thought I'd follow you around, Chris, but it was a blast. So, but yeah, anything you guys can do to do that, you can subscribe to Holding the Highline by going to our Substack. And of course, Matt doesn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyways. But Matt is the chief editor over at Burgundy Wave. Burgundy Wave, the longest surfing website following the Colorado Rapids. And Matt did an amazing thing by keeping that alive. We're really appreciated. So you can always put a little money in the jar for Matt and his writers over at Burgundy Wave. And we are really appreciative of that. Folks, we will see you on the flip side after 2 more matches. We'll see if the Rapids can rise up a little bit higher in the table even, or if they're going to lock down that third position for a little bit longer. And thanks for listening. Peace.